say implementation planning behind tab one. I believe there's several documents, and Dan Morris from the regional office is going to lead us through that discussion. And anytime you're ready, Dan.
Well, good afternoon, and I'm Dan Morris. I work in the regional office, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to speak to you about a meeting we had a couple of weeks ago at the Northeast Regional Office to basically begin the conversation about Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act implementation in the Northeast region. The purpose of the meeting was to troubleshoot implementation of the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act, or MSRA, from the Northeast regional perspective, to identify questions and issues of concern, and to establish a plan of action for moving forward under the MSRA. Specifically, we worked on three questions. What are the MSRA issues or questions that require nationally applicable policy development or regulatory development from headquarters? What MSRA issues or questions are within our power to resolve within the region, and what is our plan for doing so? And in the meantime, how are we going to operate in the absence of complete information or a final policy decision? So it wasn't a meeting about getting to answers so much as it was about identifying and organizing the many questions we have about Magnuson reauthorization in the region. The attendees at the meeting were Pat Kirkle, George Darcy, and some senior staff from the Northeast Regional Office. Gene Martin, Adam Eisenberg came up from General Counsel and Headquarters. Nancy Thompson from the Science Center, and the New England Council was represented by Paul Howard, Chris Kellogg, Tom Neese, and John Papalardo. And their Mid-Atlantic counterparts were there as well. So today I'd like to give you a brief overview of the proceedings, and as we go along, I'll do my best to answer your questions, but I just want to emphasize this was a meeting about identifying the questions and kind of a groupthink about how we're going to get to answers, how are we going to forward these answers to headquarters for their contemplation as they're developing various policies and regulations. So, I just might point out that the presentation is tab 11. I'm sorry, item number 11 behind tab 1. Okay. So to sort of set the stage for this implementation discussion, there are a lot of things going on, most of them generated from headquarters. And the items that have been given the highest priority and that have been creating work and staffing needs in the regions and hitting on the councils for some of them are the items that have a statutory deadline. Naturally, when Congress gives us a deadline, that becomes a very high priority item. And here's a sampling of them. By my reckoning, there's 17 national and Northeast regional projects with deadlines. And some of the highlights are the Framework 42, conduct a unique and thorough examination of the potential impact. That's been completed and submitted to Congress. Secretarial action on state groundfish fishing. That determination has been submitted and is undergoing internal review. An environmental review process, update the agency procedures for compliance with NEPA. And Chris Kellogg's going to be reporting out on that this afternoon. But that was an issue of big concern at the meeting. Most of these were footnotes for some of the larger issues that we discussed. Cooperative research and management program, promulgate regulations that create an expedited, uniform, and regionally based process for experimental fishing permits. There's a national working group that's been formed for those. A couple more highlights is the Mid-Atlantic Council has been tapped to prepare a report on cross-council coordination with special emphasis on council boundary states, and I know they're at work on that. And there is a requirement to develop guidelines and procedures for voting eligibility requirements under limited access programs in New England and the Gulf states. and there's a one-year timeline for that. And a working group has recently been formed on that, but has made no real progress to date. In addition to these deadline-oriented activities, there are several major activities, implementation activities, that are certainly of interest to New England. And rulemaking and EIS preparation is underway for the annual catch limits and accountability measure provisions. And Mark Milliken from headquarters will be speaking on that right when I'm done. Rulemaking on new council administrative requirements related to SSCs, including topics like stipends, financial disclosure, confidentiality of statistics. So SF and Sustainable Fisheries in Headquarters and General Counsel in Headquarters are pulling notes together and doing the analysis to determine just what kind of changes are needed to 50 CFR 600 subparts B and C. Development of guidelines related to limited access privilege programs. These are separate from the referendum guidelines. And this project began last summer, I suppose, in response to several GAO reports, and it's been redirected a bit by the Magnuson reauthorization, and an advance notice of proposed rulemaking will be published to pave the way now that the Act is in place. Should any of these guidelines on eligibility, share consolidation, community protection, cost recovery, should any of those need to be of prescriptive nature? And there's a rulemaking forthcoming on buybacks, on the Fishing Capacity Reduction Program. The Financial Services Division will be dusting those off and updating them to reflect the new provisions in the Act. So this is the context. This is what's going on. And then one of the questions we ask ourselves in the meetings, what else is there to the amendments, and what does it all mean to the Northeast region? And again, here's the questions that we looked at. What requires nationally applicable guidance? What's within our power to resolve or work on in the region? What do we need to think about first? And in the meantime, how are we going to move forward? So these are the big issues. We had, I don't know, a dozen agenda items, but these items took up the most of the agenda. And I'll have remarks on each of these. And for each one, I'll try to give you a sense of the sorts of questions that were being asked and also what some of the next steps might be. Now, for some of them, like annual catch limits and accountability measures, the next step is the next presenter. Rulemaking is ongoing. So for that one, I'm going to focus on sort of the Northeast or New England component, rather than the substance of the rulemaking, what does it mean to us in terms of planning to adopt some of these actions? The MSRA added an entire new section on section 303 alpha on limited access privilege programs, or LAPs, and so we'll mention those. And it expands the roles of the SSCs, as we mentioned, and it calls for an overhaul of the environmental review process. That is how the councils do NEPA. And so that was a big issue at the meeting, but as I mentioned, Chris Kellogg is going to address that. Okay. So the first item, major item for us, is the annual catch limits and accountability measures. Of course, there were lots of questions about the substance and the meanings and just what is the agency going to do about this, and we're going to put off discussion of that. I'd really like to focus on the effective dates, the second and third bullet on the screen. We have a scoping hearing today, which is to support rulemaking with a target date of January of 2008. The effective dates for this provision, that the council shall establish a mechanism for specifying annual catch limits at a level such that overfishing does not occur in the fishery, including measures to ensure accountability. The effective date of that is 2010 for fisheries subject to overfishing and 2011 for all others. So what we did in advance of the meeting was that NIMF staff reviewed all the FMPs in the region and made their best guess about how the regs will the regulations will turn out next January, and tried to make preliminary determinations about whether the FMPs comply. And rather than going FMP through FMP and trying to spell it out, I think we could take a long time doing that. I think it's just fair to say for this discussion that all of them are going to need some work, either their recreational components, their commercial components, or both. And so the meeting went quickly into how in the heck are you going to get all this done before fishing year 2010. But keep in mind that the secretary requires at least 6 months or it often needs up to 6 months to review the package and to work it through rulemaking. So that backs us up to the middle of 09 for our target date for these. So the group at the meeting discussed whether ongoing amendment development, any of those activities that are currently in development could be a vehicle for the changes. Do we know enough to insert a placeholder until there's final guidance on what the annual catch limits and accountability measures really mean? Or do we risk delaying these actions that are underway? So it was really an operations-type discussion. What the heck are we going to do? So we discussed the possibility of an omnibus amendment or some combination of one-off amendments and some multi-FMP amendments. And we talked about timing. Again, January 2008, we'll have the final rule. I believe we're looking at July or August of 2007. We'll have a proposed rule. We may have a little more to go on there. Things may be slightly more certain, and then maybe placeholders in ongoing activities would be a bit more meaningful for us. So the way this boiled down, the councils and the Northeast Regional Office agreed to review all the information that was presented and the tables that were presented and revisit the issue in May at the next meeting of the Northeast Region Coordinating Council. The NRCC maintains a regional activity and resource planning matrix that looks out 2 years, 18 months or 2 years, and is used to help schedule council actions and to track major checkpoints through development, approval, and rulemaking. So the question in May at the NRCC will be, how can we fit it all in before the effective dates and what goes first? Of course, any planning will have to allow for the uncertainty of what the final annual catch limit and accountability measure requirements will be. We have a bit more, like I said, we'll have a bit more of information in July or August when the proposed rule comes out. We spent an awful lot of time on limited access privilege programs. And as I mentioned, the LAP section is truly extensive and detailed. And we began it with a session on definitions, a very close look at some of the key terms in the Act. Any new management scheme, and this is why it's particularly important overall and in New England, any new management scheme determined to be a LAP or a limited access privilege program would be subject to these 303 alpha provisions, which includes cost recovery requirements. So understanding what is and isn't a LAP is absolutely critical. Also in New England, any proposal for a new individual fishing quota or IFQ program would require a referendum and approval by 2/3 of those voting, except that sectors for which there seems to be growing interest in New England, would be exempt from the referendum requirement. There's also something called a regional fishing association that seems to cut across several of these definitions. So clearly under these new requirements, distinguishing a LAP from an IFQ from a sector, and a sector from a LAP may have very significant implications. And so just to give you an example of some of the hair-splitting discussions that we had, I'll read through some of the questions that were developed, but these are important hairs that are being split. The definitions of a LAP and IFQ are very similar. A LAP refers to the allocation of a portion of a stock, of a stock's TAC, and an IFQ refers to an amount as a percentage. So a portion for a LAP and an IFQ is a percentage. What's the difference between their usage, portion and percentage, under the Magnuson Act. How can an allocation be expressed as a portion such that it is not a percentage? It seems to be a very trivial question, but it may have important implications for the region. To be considered a LAP, must a quota allocation management program apply to an entire fishery, or may the LAP component may there be a LAP component within a larger fishery? These are currently unanswered questions, maybe not currently answerable, and so they're being forwarded to headquarters as they're developing guidance documents. We hope that these will be in, among their considerations. I mentioned regional fishing associations. It's an association for the benefit of the social and economic needs of harvesters, processors, and otherwise those who are substantially dependent on a fishery. So there were questions about what are the implications of that, and what could an RFA be used for if it's recognized under the Act as being not eligible for an initial allocation of limited access privileges, but for to hold allocations at some date. What are all the mechanics of a LAP? Of an RFA. And questions such as, may multiple sectors or fishing communities form an RFA for the purposes of exchanging quota and receiving quota for which they are not may not normally be qualified? I think these are just unexamined issues that we hope will be addressed in the forthcoming guidance. So we spent a lot of time just on the definitions and distinctions, and then, holy cow, there's the rest of the seven pages of new language in this section. And these are some very important issues. Topics include cost recovery, share consolidation, what has to be in a LAP plan, and criteria for initial allocations. So cost recovery is a good one to just throw out a few of the questions. The new provisions require council to develop a program of fees paid by limited access privilege holders that will cover the cost of management, data collection, and analysis and enforcement activities. How will the council get this information from NOAA Fisheries Service and other agencies? There are a number of questions. Allocation, the new language in the Act requires that the council consider, as in development of initial allocation, consider things such as current and historical harvest, employment and harvesting and processing, investment dependent and or dependence on a fishery, community participation, cultural, social framework, small business, avoiding share consolidation. So the first question, those having to do with kind of the technical requirements of cost recovery, is one that we may be forwarding to headquarters. Some of these later questions are things that the council is probably going to have to work through and resolve for themselves, and the questions will become better defined as you pound through them and through your committee work and really do the analysis to get to the bottom of some of these things. SSCs. This is another important change to the Magnuson Act. The new language at 302G requires, among other things, that SSCs take on additional responsibilities, that members submit to financial disclosure requirements, and that certain SSC or advisory panel members be paid a stipend for their services. The provisions will prompt both councils to analyze and possibly recast how their SSCs, APs, and other committees and teams are constructed and the task they are assigned. Both councils committed to looking into this and reporting back at the NRCC meeting in May. The New England Council uses PDTs to develop management advice and other products that the new provisions seem to require the SSCs. Questions probably for regional resolution are, can the PDTs structures and processes be adjusted to satisfy the SSC peer review requirements? If a council uses a peer review process to establish tax, does the SSC have to approve the advice from the peer review process? What if there's disagreement? So there need to be new working rules of how the SSCs are going to operate and how the committees and teams are going to work together. Most of the questions that will be directed to the headquarters regarding SSCs have to do with the business end. The stipend is subject to the availability of funds. A stipend is to be paid to SSC or advisory panel members who are not state or federal employees. Well, how will funds for this expenditure be included in the budget planning process? The requirement is currently here, but the budget, you know, the budget process is going to lag by some time. So how is Paul Howard going to balance the books? And what's to be done if the funds aren't there? SSC members will now have to disclose financial interest in lobbying or advocacy, including as an employee. And so there were a number of questions about that. Okay. I think we covered all of those. All right. So what's next? What's next for the council and the region? The chief thing that we need to do is just stay attuned to those 17 deadline activities and the half dozen or more other implementation activities that are underway. Stay engaged both at the regional office and council staff so that we're sure to have a voice at the table as they're being developed. The meeting report that I'm talking about and reading from today will be submitted to headquarters, to the Office of Sustainable Fisheries and General Counsel, so that these comments will be in front of them as they're working on these national policy development issues. Council and NIMS leadership will work on planning for the ACL and accountability measures at the next NRCC meeting. It's going to be a big part of the meeting and working through that matrix and trying to fit it all in the calendar. And both councils have committed to analyzing how they're using their council or their committees and teams and their SSCs and trying to explore the implications of the new language and how and whether and how the SSCs are going to have to be restructured to comply with the law. And there are opportunities for follow-up. There's a CCC meeting with all the council leadership and regional leadership next month, and it's followed by an NRCC meeting a couple weeks later. So I think everyone's going to keep plugging away at this. So that's what I have for you. I appreciate your time today, and I'll do my best to answer your questions, and I would hope that those who are in attendance at the meeting may help out as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. I don't think there's any questions. This was really clear. I'm kidding. No reflection on you. It just the topics are pretty meaty. So, Dr. Pierce.
Did the planning group conclude that the ACLs are hard quotas?
No, sir. In the prior to the meeting, the NIMS staff conducted analysis based on our best guess, and they listed several tools that might be used. Of course, we don't know because the rulemaking hasn't gone full course. I know that they considered hard tax. I know that they considered triggers and payback plans as maybe meeting the criteria. But I'm sure Mark Milliken will be talking about this further, that no one is saying at this point that hard tax are the only solution.
One further question that I think is appropriate for you. Did the planning group have any discussions regarding the mixed stock exception that's in the national standard guidelines now, and whether or not it would be something that could still be retained?
Yes, it wasn't a subject we dwelled on. It is in the meeting report, and I'd have to refer to them to answer. If you'd like, I can do that, or I can meet you as a sidebar and go through that. Okay, the latter.
Mike Leary, did you have your hand up? Mike, no? Anyone else? Sally?
Yeah, I think that was a really important question that was just asked, and rather than have a sidebar, if you could just bring that back to the table, I think that would be good on the mixed stock exception. Thank you.
Pat? I think there was a letter back to the council not that long ago from Silver Spring on this question. And maybe Galen or Mark remembers the details better than I do, or George, but I think the gist of the letter was that although the mixed stock exception still is included in the guidelines, certainly the changes that were made in the act through the reauthorization make it even less likely that it could be used. And as you know, it was already pretty difficult to use.
Yeah, I had two questions for you. First, how is a RFA different from a SECTA?
That's one of the questions we're submitting. The definitions appear to be overlapping. And I wish Gene Martin were here. He spent a great deal of time and basically had a law school type presentation and a word by word analysis. It may be an RFA, but not all RFAs are necessarily LAPs. So is it an RFA and a LAP, or is it just an RFA, or is it just a LAP? I mean, these are some of the questions that we're having to struggle with and some of the hairs that we're having to split. As far as is it a LAP, currently, sectors are not issued a permit, a single permit. They do receive an allocation without a permit, but they don't have some of the other trappings of what a LAP is. So we need to do further analysis to really sort that out. But I can't give you an answer to the question about is an RFA or is a sector an RFA, because that, frankly, that's one we're forwarding to headquarters.
Okay. And my second one was, since the SSCs may have to pass on the total allowable catches, does that mean they're going to become a voting body? Right now, the SSC here works at least marginally by consensus. But I, having watched some of their meetings in the past, I can't see, as it's currently made up, that this RSSC could probably, by consensus, approve total allowable catches.
The council's, the executive directors made a commitment to look very closely at the SSC processes, and I think that's among their considerations, just how are they going to make decisions, how are they going to communicate. And Paul, is there anything you'd like to say?
Anyone else in the council? Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, there's been conflicting determinations on this issue. The sector being defined as not being considered an LAPP at the current, is that relevant to New England only, or does that apply throughout the country?
I don't know the definitions of sectors in the other regions. Sector is defined at 50 CFR 648, so it's applicable to the Northeast region, and I'm not sure how it's being defined elsewhere. So I'm sorry I'm not answering your question, but I don't know that we have the information to do so.
We'll bring it up again next week, because there was a summary document that came out, but after a question, it appeared that definition only applied to New England. And that was one person's interpretation of it back at the last council meeting. So it'll be interesting next week when you make this presentation. If you could look it up in between. Are you in fact going to give the presentation to Mid-Atlantic next week?
I have not been invited, no.
Oh, good. Well, not good.
Anyone else? Okay, I take limited questions from the audience, if there are any. Otherwise, we're going to go into the next agenda item, which is a scoping hearing on ending overfishing. Anyone in the audience? Okay. Back to the council. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Mark and Galen, do you need a moment to get set up? If you need 5 minutes, we can just take it. Okay.